Recording. So let me, I'm going to post this on what's called Countercurrents. And I want to introduce everybody to Christopher Wickham, author, former FBI hostage rescue guy. He's been, Chris and I have known each other, good God, we're going almost 25 years. Old
Easy,
guys.
yeah, right. Be
Old guy.
25, maybe 30.
Yeah,
Yeah,
old guy territory.
right.
When we want to talk about snipers and you want to talk about the attempt on Donald Trump's life, yeah, I've offered my opinions, but my experience pales in comparison to what Brother Chris has to offer. So, man, take it away. Tell us what you think.
First of all, Larry, great to see you, brother. You know how I feel about
Yeah.
you.
Yeah.
My
Same
background.
here.
I wasn't. I did start out in the FBI. I was a sniper on the hostage rescue team, deployed for a lot of controversial things and classified things. A lot of experience over the years, and then after that, worked with your side on the intelligence side, Kosovo, Yemen, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, East Timor, a lot of different places. So anyway, that's the background. This situation, from a sniper's standpoint, is two things: the Secret Service working with the Secret Service and their protocols, and ballistics. What would have happened at those distances? What were the weapons involved? Was it a good shot? Was it a bad shot? What went wrong? Who did things right? And making sense, because I've watched all the coverage on cable news, network news, a lot online on the social media feeds, and there's a bunch of ridiculous information
Right.
that I think
Yeah.
is leading people in the wrong direction. So maybe you and I'll have a discussion that will at least prompt some proper thinking, because these talking heads, and we should say, Larry, you and I have both worked as talking heads. We worked for NBC, and I worked at CBS.
I was at Fox.
You were at Fox. We've both done MSNBC back in
Yeah.
the Pravda days. We've worked for years doing these analysis. I think both of us worked the DC sniper back in the day. I was
Good.
with NBC, so the Today Show. So it's not the first time we've talked about this sort of a tragedy, this sort of attack, this sort of a crime. So where do you think we start?
Well, let's start with I've come to the conclusion, and you can tell me where I'm full of crap, but that there's only two choices. This is either utter incompetence by the Secret Service, and or they were complicit in this. There's no gray area.
I would agree with you. I think it might be elements of both, but I think the reality is looking at what actually happened, and then people can make their own choices. And I always say, if you make decisions and choices and gather opinions based on facts, I'm all with you. If you do it based on ridiculous information,
Right.
it's a rabbit hole that goes nowhere. So let's look at what we're dealing with, first of all, which is a public event. The President of the United States, among other dignitaries, is protected by the Secret Service by mandate, back to Lincoln, right?
Right.
The Secret Service for a very long time was Department of Treasury, and a very small organization, meaning a couple thousand agents. I think right now it's probably 3,000 agents. Those were dispersed between protective duty and Treasury, meaning monetary money investigations, a lot of counterfeiting,
Right.
but it was a financial crimes investigative unit for the Treasury Department, unlike the FBI, which is the Justice Department. So understanding this first is important. The Secret Service, part of the Secret Service's historic charter, gives them responsibility to protect the President of the United States and other specified dignitaries within the Department of Treasury, now Department of Homeland Security.
Right.
Within that responsibility, agents would rotate through protective elements, right? You would travel for a period of time on a protective duty, and then you might go back to working investigations at a field office. Once an attack is made on a protectee, in this case, the President of the United States, it becomes a Department of Justice investigation, and the investigative wing of the Justice Department, in this case, is the FBI. So you
Right.
have two things. You have a protective duty from the Secret Service. Once an attack is made, it becomes the purview, the investigative responsibility of the FBI, and that's where we are right now. Once you saw this play out on TV, once the attack was made on President Trump, Then it became an FBI investigation, and that's what you're seeing now. All right.
Right.
So that's the investigative responsibility, and you talk about the screw-up. The protocols are defined, they're effective, and we have not seen a successful attack on a president of the United States since 1981, Ronald Reagan.
Right. Describe what it's like, because people don't understand that when you go out to do, let's call it the site survey beforehand, because you've got to check both the venue, the access points to that, as well as the perimeter, like I would say at least out to 500 yards around that.
Exactly. And you got, I would say, I am not a secret. I have never worked as a Secret Service agent. I have worked with all elements of Secret Service on protective details, including presidents. I've worked on those details, and I have trained with them and with their protocols. I'm not saying I'm an expert. I'm saying I have experience hands-on doing what they do.
Right.
And have an understanding of how it goes. And it goes like this. Anytime you have, you see an event on TV, you see the Secret Service agents with the earpiece and the suits and the sunglasses. Those are the close perimeter, the body people, the body guys, and they are often described as window dressing, that they are the forward face of the Secret Service. That's not fair because they, as we saw in this instance, are incredibly brave, well-trained professionals. And right. In this case, they acted very, very admirably, in my point. Then you have the outer perimeter, which is protected by two elements, the counter-assault team, which the guys you saw coming in tactical gear, and they are just that. They counter an assault, something like you've seen in other countries, like the famous one with Anwar Sadat, remember, where they were at a parade and they attacked the stands. It would be something along those lines. Then you have the counter sniper team, which is where we're going with this discussion. Those are the guys that we saw behind President Trump on the peak of that roof, two of them in black uniforms behind long guns.
Right.
So three elements. You've got the counter assault team, which cover the outer perimeter, the furthermost perimeter, and let's say with a rifle, we're talking 500 yards, as you just said. You have an inner perimeter, which is protected by magnetometers, by a different level of preparation, and with with Secret Service agents in suits that you might refer to as a uniform, but other elements of that as well. People in the crowd and oftentimes uniformed personnel who run the magnetometers and screen everybody coming in and out. It is a very successful, very time-proven, very carefully delineated series of protocols that has worked since 1981 in some very, very difficult situations. 9/11, so many different, there's no point in going into it. So here's where it comes back to what you were saying. For people that don't do this for a living, an advanced team comes in to every single, ideally, comes into every single venue prior to the event. There's a long-term thing. Many of them work with local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies. Right. So the Secret Service has liaisons in many, many venues have security protocols for obvious reasons. You go to a Super Bowl, they have their own security protocols. They dovetail, they mesh, they work well together. But you have federal, state, and local agencies involved. They have local intelligence. They have they understand routes. That would include medical evacuation to trauma centers. It's a very elaborate schedule of things the Secret Service checks down that could be anything. I mean, President Biden fell on stage. He could have broken his leg and needed to go for medical care. President Trump yesterday got shot in the head with a high-powered rifle, and he needs a different level of care.
Right.
That's all delineated in this. What we're talking about specifically is the firearms-related assault on the president. In this case, we saw play out to the casual observer. The president feels something go by his head, grab his ear. He goes to the ground because he's already been president for 4 years and he understands what he's supposed to do and how he does it. When he realizes that he's being shot at, he by protocol goes to the ground. And you saw by the time Donald Trump hit the ground, you saw a suited Secret Service body man in a close perimeter shield his body with his life. That response was immediate. It was by the book. It was extraordinary in the
Yeah,
throw.
I agree.
Every one of those guys could take the next round in the back of their head, right?
Yeah, no, exactly right.
And whoever says anything about politics doesn't know what they're talking about. Secret Service agents could be Democrat, Republican, or I don't give a shit. They're still going to dive in front of a bullet, and that says a lot about what they do professionally.
And that's why I've drawn the distinction between the guys and gals on the inside who, got to the president, did their job, surrounded him. I have no complaints with what the Secret Service did inside. It's what the guys who were supposed to do the advanced planning and the counter sniper stuff, that's where the issues come.
Okay, good. I agree 100%. I was trying to give a little background so people will know what
No,
we.
you're doing great. Keep going.
This plays out the way people see it because I watched this live. I was watching the rally on television and I saw this thing happen from the time the president came out on stage until the time he was taken away in that SUV. So I saw this play out and I'm going through my mind what you have to process. It's like 9/11. You see the plane go in, you go, what is that? Same thing with this. We may suspect something's going to happen to Donald Trump. You don't anticipate you're going to see it playing out on a Saturday afternoon. So I see it. I see the immediate reaction of the president. I see him go to the ground. I see Secret Service get on top of him, respond, not get on top of him. They responded brilliantly. They protect his body by protocol, and you can hear through the microphone at the lectern what they're saying, that ready to move, move. All trained, all played out just as you expect. So then I go, well, what just happened? So you can see the president. I start checking down my list that I would if I were on scene. And if I'm on scene, I'm saying the president turned, was facing to the right. He goes to the right side of his head. The round had to have come from stage right or from the screen. You're looking at the screen, the direction of the round. And that the reason you look for that is because you're looking for the direction you're trying to reverse vector the round, right? That's what was on the roof are doing. That's what we all do in a gunfight. Doesn't matter if you're a private first class in Afghanistan or whatever, somebody's shooting at you, you want to figure out the way they're coming from, right? That's the first mechanism. You hear the pop, 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 a number of rounds. And my first thinking is this, Larry. Many viewers won't know that gunshots do very odd things. First of all, you have the primary percussion of the round going off at the platform itself, in this case, an AR-15, right? That round is moving supersonic. When the projectile itself, the bullet itself, travels past your head, it makes, because of the speed of the bullet is traveling at a supersonic rate of speed, it makes a supersonic crack that sounds like another gunshot. So if you're in combat, many people will tell you this, that you can tell how far away the shooter is by the sounds, the two different sounds. You hear the round going by your head, which for a 300 Win Mag or something like that, sounds like a gunshot. It is that loud. It's extremely loud. A 223 round, because of the mass of the bullet and the speed of the round, in my experience, is a different sound signature. But I heard that snap through the microphone, which was about 3 feet from the president's head at the lectern. And my first reaction was, it's a high-powered rifle. That is not the gunshot. That is the sound of the bullet, the projectile itself going past the president's head. So now I'm thinking to myself, this is not a handgun in the crowd. This is somebody else shooting in. And that was apparent to me within the first couple seconds, 3 or 4 seconds. The signature of the rounds that you can hear on CNN or Fox or whatever you're listening to. You've seen the video 100. So now I know we've got a high-powered rifle. We know the president's movement suggests it's coming from his right across the stage. And now online you can see the actual bullet, the contrail of the bullet moving through the humidity in the air. You can actually see the round. So I'm thinking the shooter is off to the president's right. It's a high-powered bullet. It's outside the stands. Those rounds are going to land someplace, so you're going to have other casualties because those bullets go someplace.
They got to stop somewhere.
Got to stop somewhere. And the president turns his head, and his side of his head is covered in blood. So I go, the president has been shot at. The president has been hit. He has gone to the ground. He's covered with the Secret Service. Where's the shooter? How many rounds are going to come through? And that's where we go next. I say this because that is precisely what the Secret Service agents are doing, the guys on the ground. They're looking for the threat so they can neutralize the threat, because a high-powered rifle with a 30-round magazine, you got a lot of potential for dead people.
Right.
And it happens very quickly. So I don't know anything about the area. I haven't seen any pictures of it, but I assume two things. One, the rifle is some distance outside the original, the inner perimeter, and it has to be elevated because it shot into the protected inner perimeter. So it has to be an elevated sniper. That elevated sniper is probably on a rooftop. And now my immediate thinking is, we're not dealing with the counter assault team who would handle a ground assault. We're talking about a counter sniper team engagement, because they would be responsible for an elevated long rifle shot, aimed fire, probably with optics. Somebody knows what they're doing, because they hit a human being in the head. And in this case, thank God, it missed by a quarter of an inch from creasing his skull. But now I'm saying, okay, now we've got the thing outside. So now when I look and reconstruct in the video that we have, we're talking about the counter-assault team.
Right.
The counter-assault team has information from the advance about elevated platforms that we could, from which you could launch an open air assault, a sniper shot. We call them open air assaults. So I'm thinking to myself, well, what do we got around this? What's around the perimeter, which is the magnetometers and the uniform security and the close protection detail of the president and all those protocols? We're outside the immediate venue now. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, man. Absolute sense.
So now I'm thinking, okay, now I was a sniper. Now I am the sniper in a counter sniper team. Where are they? How many are on the job? And how are they engaging the threat? And you hear, very shortly after those three shots, the president's on the deck. You can hear through, the only reason we hear these shots is because of the microphone at the dais.
Right.
And that's important, because that microphone picks up the projectiles going by. It does not pick up a gunshot 150 yards away. It's picking up the projectiles going through the air past it. And those are the sonic booms that I'm talking about.
Right.
The snap, snap, snap. Then you hear something that's a very different sound. And it's a different sound because those secret, this guy shooting a 223, the guys on the roof are probably, and I don't know this, I would have probably been using a 308, but that's kind of dinosaur around in these days.
Yeah, 6.5 Creedmoor maybe.
Yeah, 6.5 Creedmoor, something with a six, and probably a six handle or a 300 Win Mag.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Very possible a 300 Win Mag. I don't know the answer. I do know this. They're different sound signatures. So you've got bullets coming in. We're hearing the projectile snap of a suit. We're not hearing the gunshot. We're hearing the snap. The rounds coming in behind the president, which are in line with the microphone, are the reports of a different caliber rifle. It's a different sound signature.
Right.
Now I know somebody else is engaged. I assume it's the Secret Service counter sniper team, those snipers. Then we see them on the roof. And here's where I come back, if you don't have any other questions. Here's now what I look in reconstructing what, in my opinion, likely happened. Remember that somebody comes in before the event to do a survey. The survey looks at everything. If you're in a town, oftentimes they'll weld manhole covers shut. They'll check every garbage bin for IEDs. It's an elaborate, very well thought out and very professionally managed over time series of protocols. In this case, the sniper element, counter sniper element, is looking for places that a bad guy could shoot from, right? You can't be, if you look at the topographical, or not topographical, if you look at the aerial photographs of that site, no one's going to shoot from the ground level up and get in there. It's impossible.
Exactly right.
So it has to be an elevated platform. And then you look and you say, well, where are the elevated platforms? They are those buildings that we now know to be the location of the sniper. So typically you would expect someone, local, state, federal police, or the Secret Service to have people on those rooftops.
Exactly right. Why didn't they have them there?
Okay, we're going to get there. Because we're still going back to your original question, but you got to know the facts. You got to know what we're dealing with in order to address those, because the conspiracy theories right now are off the charts.
Yeah.
And some of them make sense, but just trying to give the basic information. So now you go, okay, you have a very finite number of promontories, the rooftops of those buildings where an assassin could elevate their shot, their line of sight, to a point where they could actually be effective. That's a very limited thing.
Yeah.
Now you look at very famous photographs of the two men standing on the promontory above President Trump, a rooftop, a ridgeline at a rooftop. The first photographs you see are two men standing in uniform with binoculars, right? They're scanning the area. They're not looking 360 degrees because they've already determined that you couldn't fire from level ground and jeopardize the protectee, in this case, the president, former president of the United States. So the snipers, the Secret Service counter snipers on the roof, if that's who they are, I mean, they're men in uniform.
Yeah, I'm assuming that that's who they were, but...
And maybe I shouldn't make that assumption, but that's what I assume. It says police on their body armor, but that is to be expected. The two men assigned to sniper duty above the president in the photographs that everybody see, the earliest photographs and images that I've seen to date, they're standing with binoculars. Their long guns are on the deck. They're right. They're on the ridge, right? The next series of photographs, that very famous one where you see them, the camera switches off and comes back to them. At that point, later in time, but not much later in time, the sniper on the left has a tripod at about waist level with a rifle, a long gun, scoped long gun, on a tripod. His partner is lying on the deck on a bipod at the peak of the roof, which is the position you want. You want to be as stable as possible. That means lying down. If I or any professional sniper, I believe, maybe somebody's going to argue with this, but I believe I would never take an unstable position on one knee from a tripod unless I had no other choice. I want to be on the deck. I want to be based with a position that provides the most stability. The only reason I would go to a tripod with an elevated rifle on one knee is because that's the only way I could see my target, right? He clearly made that choice for a reason. Then we see in the follow-up video, we see the President Donald Trump, or Vice President, or the former President Donald Trump, reacts to the shot. He hits, you can see him grab his ear and go to the deck. We know at that point that the shots have been fired, obviously. And we hear very quickly after that, that the sniper, the law enforcement sniper, takes a shot, one or more shots, because you can hear a different sound signature. And if you time it, it's a very, very brief period of time. It's just a few seconds.
Yeah. Right? A total, probably 4 seconds total from beginning to end. If that.
So common sense tells you that if you have a 360 degree perimeter and you hear a gunshot, it's going to take you more than 4 seconds to acquire the target and shoot and kill the bad guy. Right.
Right.
Which seems absolutely apparent that one of those two snipers, the one on his knee at the tripod or the one on the deck behind a rifle, they're both pointing in the same direction. Their partners are working together on the same information. They must have known where the target was in order to acquire it within that period of time and shoot.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
137 or 147 yards. I don't know what it is. Let's just say 150 yard shot.
Right.
With a 300 Win Mag. With today's optics it's nothing, right? I mean, we used to shoot, we'd practice shooting aspirin at 200 meters. So that's
right, but
nothing.
But help people understand that even though, you know, you're in a stable platform, you're prone, you got all your bodies in contact with the ground, you're trying to hold that thing steady, there's still this thing called the natural arc of movement, where even as you're looking through that scope, that's why you've got to learn to control your breath.
Right. So you've got the average law enforcement shot is something like 80. Don't quote me, but it is something like 85 yards. It's well, the average law enforcement sniper shot statistically in the United States is well within 100, inside 100 yards. The average military sniper shot in a war theater, Afghanistan, Iraq, most recently, could easily be 500 to 1,000 meters, easily. Because enforcement, you have to hit a specific person in a specific spot. In the military, you might take 12 shots to get a guy and might get him. I'm not talking about capability. I'm talking talking about rules of engagement.
Right.
So we've got two elements now. We've got a bad guy with what has been reported to be an AR, 30-round magazine, probably. I have not seen it, but that's what I'm going off in terms of what I've read. And you have a professional law enforcement sniper with the very best equipment and the very best training and the very best experience you could hope for. But what a lot of people don't realize is this, and you can see it in the video. I saw it and I noticed it immediately. If you're looking through a rifle scope on a military or a civilian issued long gun, and you're looking at 140 yards, 150 yards, the world is this big.
Right.
I mean,
you can't
say shit unless you know what you're looking for, right?
Right.
Because there's a world outside that tube, and that tube, because of the magnification, is very small. So when you watch the video, you will see the sniper on one knee looking through his scope. He lifts his head up and he looks over his scope. I don't know why he did it, but I know if I were on that scope, I would be trying to figure out what I was looking at.
Yeah.
Because you can see at 140 yards, you can see with a naked eye better than you can through the tiny, tiny tunnel of that scope.
Right.
And if it were me, and I'm not speaking for the Secret Service, if it was Secret Service, I'm not speaking for the law enforcement sniper. If that were me, I would have done that because I was trying to find the bad guy with my naked eye. I'd find a visual feature that I could hone in with my scope. That's what I think happened. It just so happened that when he lifted his eye, and you can watch the video, you can hear the shots, you can see the president, former President Donald Trump, go to his ear and go to the ground. So what I think you're going to find out, and we're going to come back to why, what I think you're going to find out is the men on the peak were looking through binoculars. Video shows they moved from binoculars to two rifle positions, one prone on the peak of the roof, very flat sloped roof, one on a tripod standing on one knee, which is less than ideal in every circumstance.
Right.
Why is one down and one up? Probably because they wanted a better promontory. Then you see the sniper on one knee looking over his scope. The rounds come in. Those incoming rounds tragically kill that one gentleman. I can't remember.
The firefighter,
right. Killed him, injured two other people. It's on. There's incoming fire. In that microsecond, the sniper on his knee and the sniper on the deck engage the target, shoot the target, kill the target, and it's over, right?
Yeah.
Then you see the evacuation of the president. So then we come back to your original question. Now we look at it and say, what went wrong? The very, very clear mistake that's going to lead to a million theories and endless speculation is, how did a Secret Service professional organization, protective organization, that since 1981, for 43 years, has protected every single president and protectee, vice presidents,
right,
cabinet members, foreign dignitaries. They've never had something happen until Donald Trump goes to a fairground in Pennsylvania, and then suddenly everything goes sideways. Then you contribute the reports coming in now, because everybody had a cell phone. You're going to see, and you know, Kennedy had one Zapruder film.
Yeah.
This is going to have endless video, and some of it's going on social media, some of it's going to the FBI, but you're going to see endless video on this thing. But we do know people have said on camera, contemporaneous with the event, there's a guy on the roof, he's got a gun. They're yelling it.
Yeah.
A highly circulated video now of a guy saying, look, I told the cops, we saw him climbing up the roof. There's another guy that says, we saw a man walking across a field. There's another video report of somebody saying this guy was identified at a magnetometer, that he stood out at a magnetometer. And you got to remember, the Secret Service has identification protocols for everything you can imagine. I mean, they have a threat mitigation center where they look at identifying people that write bad emails and social media posts. And then a guy shows up wearing a trench coat in July with sunglasses, an AK-47, you know, he's obviously a threat as well, right?
Right, exactly right. In fact, that was one of the things initially that I looked at when they said, I said, it couldn't be in the venue because This is summer. People are wearing shorts, flip-flops, wife beater shirts, or the Tommy Bahama look. It's not easy to secrete a gun to get in that way. So it had to be outside.
Had to be outside, and people have said, and I don't know this to be the case, obviously, but I'm doing an investigation based on what I see in these reports, meaning people saying I saw it on my video camera, and they're saying we saw this guy with a gun. We saw him climbing up the roof with a gun. We're telling the police, if these spectators, and there are a lot of them, if these spectators are looking up on a roof and seeing a guy crawling around on a roof with a gun, why are local and state partners who are clearly there, why are they not seeing this guy? And if they do get reports from civilians, why are they not acting on those reports? And I've got an opinion on that. So now we've identified that during the advance, something changed. During the advance, the site survey, the recon, the protocols that would normally go in place would dictate those sniper positions, and this was in fact a sniper position, would have been covered. I mean, it happened.
At least occupied. Park somebody's ass up there.
Park somebody's ass up there, certainly cover it by the guys on the peak, on the roof behind Donald Trump, because there were no other promontories. If you look at the photograph, there were very, very, very few places in a 360-degree range of view that you could take a shot from, and that was pretty much the only one. So something went terribly wrong securing the sniper positions that turned out to be the reality of this attack. That's the first thing. The second is, how could this many people see, how could this many civilians see a man? I believe he's wearing camouflage pants based on photographs that I've seen. Carrying a long gun during an event at a fairground, walking across a field from his van to the building, and nobody interacted with that person. That's almost impossible to believe, but that also happened. Now there's video of a ladder. How did that ladder get there? Was it a ladder the maintenance for the building was used to work on the air conditioning systems? Was it a ladder that was placed there ahead of time? These are the elements that lead to so many theories because everybody wants to solve this. I mean, how could it happen? Everybody wants to come up with an answer.
How did this guy know that there was going to be a ladder there for him to climb to the roof?
Well, that's it, right? So how did it, if he did go to the magnetometers, why wasn't he stopped? If he did have a van full of IEDs, and that's speculation at this point, but that's certainly been mentioned, and he parked it in plain view, got out of it with a rifle, and walked across an open field. And that's a big open field. From where his van was, and this is all now online, from where his van was to that building, that's a big wide open walk through a flat field, unobscured by trees or vegetation, with a long gun in his hand, walking toward a Trump rally. I mean, it's
And
baffling.
yeah, you can't hide
You can't hide
that.
that. Then that ladder, the ladder, however it ended up there, is hidden in that alcove. You would not see that. You wouldn't, if he were just walking up, trying to find a way up onto the roof, how would you know that ladder was there? It's not out in plain sight. Who put the ladder there? He didn't carry it in at the time. He might have pre-staged it, or maybe it was a maintenance ladder, but how did he know it was there? Even if it was a pre-staged ladder for maintenance, an air conditioning unit or whatever, how did he know it was there? Then he get up on the roof. How did he get up on the roof and crawl? By all reports, he was low crawling up the roof. How did he crawl up the roof with civilians spotting him, telling local law enforcement, state law enforcement, federal law enforcement, which was designed, they have radios, they have cell phones, they have marching orders to pay to pass on any kind of a threat. How did that not get to the Tactical Operations Center to where the Secret Service could act on those threats, prevent the president from going out? So those things we'll find out in hearings. Those things go back to your original question. It is certainly something got screwed up really bad, and I don't know how you don't call it incompetence. Somebody between the advance and the time the president took the stage dropped that ball in a historic way. And I say historic because this hasn't happened in 43 years. 43 years, this has never happened in thousands of protective responsibilities for what I would call the preeminent unit in the entire world, the Secret Service, the very best of the very best. So that is a major, major problem. The next is this, And I think this is what people are going to be talking about. And I'll say, I don't know this, but this is what I suspect. When a law enforcement officer enters a potential conflict, they work under rules of engagement. The FBI and most federal law enforcement, meaning 1811 special agents at DEA or Secret Service, the FBI, through the Justice Department or the Treasury Department, they work under rules of engagements that say, you may not use deadly force except under the threat of death or serious bodily harm.
Right.
Those are the rules of engagement, right?
Right.
In this particular case, let's look at it. You've got snipers on the roof who, going back to what I said before, have binoculars. You have information passed from civilians to law enforcement officers. It is plausible, if not likely, those law enforcement officers pass that information to the command element at a tactical operations center, right? It's all about communications.
Right.
Let's just say, hypothetically, that information was in fact passed to a tactical operations center. And they did, in fact, know about a potential threat of somebody coming in. And we're talking now within like 5 minutes, maybe 5-7 minutes, something like that, prior to the shooting.
Yeah.
That information is making the rounds. That information has to go from a tactical, from a civilian to a law enforcement, non-Secret Service law enforcement officer to the Secret Service, which is giving out the information to different agencies. Most specifically, the guys on the roof, because they have eyes on the entire scene. And they'll say, they'll vector, they being the TAC, the Tactical Operations Center, will vector those snipers into the area where this guy was seen. Let's just say this has happened, okay?
Right.
The failure is not having anybody on the roof. Let's just say, best case scenario, this information is being passed to those snipers. That's where we see them. I speculate that's where we see them with binoculars, okay? Within a short period of time, if you saw a threat through binoculars, you would move to the vehicle to resolve that threat, which would be a rifle if you're a sniper on law enforcement. And you see one go to the rifle on the deck, and you see one on the roof, flat, relatively. And you see the other sniper get behind a tripod on one knee from an elevated position. They're looking at the same thing they were looking at through the binoculars, and they're both looking in the exact same direction, and they're both fully engaged through their scopes. So
yeah.
If it were me, and I'm trying to explain my own behavior, why I would go from binoculars to rifle positions, it means that I've identified a threat.
Yeah.
And we see, just before the shots fired at former President Trump, we see the sniper on one knee look above his optic with his naked eye at something. And by the time he gets back to his scope, the shots ring out, and then we have a resolution very quickly after that.
Yeah.
So here's what I, if this were me, this is what I would speculate. And please, it's speculation.
Yeah, no, we're offering informed speculation, because
informed speculation.
You've been behind a scope, and you've been in situations where you had to make decisions to shoot or not shoot.
Correct. Both. And I would say what might have happened is that the law enforcement snipers on the peak of the roof identified the threat, acquired the threat through optics, and have rules of engagement. And I know this because I've been in major crises with rules of engagement.
Yes, yes.
And some very famous things. And the rules of engagement were, you cannot use deadly force unless you see a threat of death or serious bodily harm. Now, let's put yourself in the eyes of the Secret Service sniper. Many people listening to this now would say, shoot the son of a bitch, right? But if you are a professional and you are in that sniper's position, what is to say that the local sheriff's office didn't have somebody up on that roof trying to cover that rooftop, which is what you would see every time?
Right. Yeah.
Do you want to make a mistake and shoot a sheriff's deputy doing his job, covering a roof that should have been covered anyway, right? So you can at least understand the possibility that the Secret Service sniper on the roof saw the threat, could not identify it as a threat of death or serious bodily harm, because it's conceivable you'd have a miscommunication, which happens all the time in military and law enforcement situations. And the guy's wearing camouflage pants. He's got an AR, which would have been carried by anybody that's there. And you've got uniforms everywhere. You've got local sheriff's department, police department, at least some federal law enforcement, I believe, other than Secret Service there. So the first reaction is, who's that guy on the roof? Is he one of ours or is he a bad guy? In almost every instance, it's probably a good guy because every roof is covered one way or another in most of these events. So I'm not saying this would happen, but the first thing that came to my mind is they probably acquired the target, probably scoped the target, probably read it into the talk, were communicating and saying, what do we do with this thing? Do we shoot? Do we not shoot? It's above their pay grade. If the guy was standing up cranking rounds, it's obvious. As soon as he pulled off, they shot him, right? So I think as we look for blame and as we assess incompetence, you've got the survey and the response to that survey in terms of securing an outer perimeter. I think it would be hard to argue that's not incompetence, right? I don't think it's the guys on the ground. I don't know who it is, but I bet you somebody's ass gets handed to them in congressional hearings. No doubt.
They've got to find that. Well, the other points you made that I people who've never looked through a scope, and I've seen it even at 100 yards, where people are trying to zero in, but they've got the magnification up to a level, and the target is down. It's 100 yards out. You can see it, but then when you're looking through that scope, man, just the slightest movement, and you miss it. So being able to focus in on a target like somebody's head at 150 yards, that's you got to be trained to do that. That's
You
not
got to
an
be trained.
easy shot.
Right. And listen, many people listening to this now have shot large mammals with scoped rifles, right? I mean, this is America, right? We hunt, we shoot deer, we shoot elk, we shoot pronghorns, we shoot gophers and squirrels. I mean, it's right. And anybody that's shot through a scoped rifle knows exactly what I'm talking about. If you're in the woods, you want to carry an open sight to shoot certain animals because, I grew up with a 30-30 rifle deer hunting because you couldn't shoot anything at those distances with a scoped rifle. It's absurd, right? But at 100 yards, as you said, it's not a question of the shot because you could hit them with a BB gun. It's not a question of trajectory because at 1,000 yards, a 308 round will go about 65 feet above line of sight in order to hit the target. At 1,000 yards, a 308 caliber round, like 172 grain, 168 grain boat tail hollow point round, will rise in trajectory about 65 feet. It's the same thing. You throw a football 10 yards to somebody, to Travis Kelce coming across the middle, and it's a rope. If you shoot 98 yards, you've got to arc the ball in order to hit it. It's the same thing with a rifle,
That's a
right? Same
great analogy.
thing. So at 100 yards, the shot is easy, the trajectory is flat. It's a no-brainer. The problem is optics. The problem is when you're looking through a tube at 100 yards through that magnification, it's at least 20. I was looking at those scopes and they're probably variable power. But even if it's only 10 power at 100 yards, you're literally looking at this part of the guy's face,
Right,
right? When
right, right,
you're
right.
going to hold a mil dot on him. And let's say hypothetically that I have seen a picture of the guy's face and how they shot him. The only hole I saw was his teeth had been blown out. So I think that's very likely where he was shot because you want to get the brain stem. And if you're lying down, you've got to go through the front to get the brain stem, but that's a likely target. My point is this. If you look at the snipers, I always shot with both eyes open, even on a scoped rifle, because I want my left eye to tell me what's going on in the world, and I want my right eye to tell me what I'm shooting. Does that make sense? If you look at the pictures online of the sniper on one knee, you can see his eye. One eye is looking through the scope and one eye is open. So I think that is most likely. But to understand how difficult it is not to shoot at 150 yards, but to acquire a target with everything in your field of view, that is difficult. So I think you're going to see these things come out as the investigation unfolds. The primary things that people are going to be talking about here in coming days, how did the Secret Service, with all its protocols, not cover those potential sniper shots? And you have obvious answers, one of which is they didn't have enough people. I mean, I've only seen two-scoped rifles in this entire event. How do you do that with two guys?
Yeah.
Right? So why did they not have more people?
Well, you know, you turn around and you say, hey, state police, sheriff's county, we need some additional personnel. We're going to plus you up, put you here on the roof. And, you know, you have a protocol to identify who's who, whether it's colors or whatever.
Well, you do. But I can say from personal experience, it doesn't always go that well, because a guy shows up on a roof with an AR within the perimeter wearing camouflage pants. The first question is, who the hell is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then everybody starts calling around from agency to agency. Is it your guy? No. Is it your guy? I don't know. Is it your guy? And if you're in one agency, you don't want to accidentally shoot, another agency.
Yeah.
I don't know that happened, but that makes sense to me. But
right.
But you can map out, and this, there are thousands of law enforcement and military snipers that have watched this that are probably having the same conversation in America as you and I sit here talking right now. You have many, many, many times that many hunters who have been in a similar situation, at least in terms of taking a shot, a scoped rifle. So these things make sense. What we're talking about makes sense to a tremendous number of the people watching this. These commentators on television have no clue what they're talking about.
Right.
And they, you know, I've heard people saying just absurd things, absolutely absurd things. One thing for people to know when they're watching these videos is the snaps that you hear are projectiles, not gunshots. They're picked up by the microphone at the dais, and the signature is different than the rounds of the gun going off right behind it, right?
Right.
Everything is translated through that microphone. The snap, the pops you hear sound like pops because they're not gunshots. They are the projectile going supersonic and making a miniature sonic boom, like sounds like snaps. It's very, very loud.
And did you determine whether or not, have you heard whether or not the shooter's rifle was it scoped or was it used in iron sights?
I have no idea. I haven't seen it, but I'll say this. The kid's 20 years old. We've seen that he was harassed and had problems at school. It's a rural thing. He could have gone out and shot someplace, but all reports say it was his dad's gun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's his dad's gun. We could probably safely assume that he is not an avid shooter who is spending a lot of time at the range.
Yeah.
And I may be wrong about that, but if you're looking at probability, the probability is this guy was not ROTC going to Delta Force, you know,
right.
on his way.
Yeah.
To Delta Force.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
So you look at it and say, if you and I try to hit something at 147 yards with an open sight AR, we're going to hit it. But an amateur who has not fired a rifle very much, that's still not a really tough shot for a 30 round magazine. And we, I don't know what it, I think they speculated he got seven rounds off, eight rounds off.
Well, I've heard that, but they're saying that, but they're basing that upon the, you know, the sounds they heard.
Yeah, the signatures.
And so in the time frame that he's shooting, because I've had some guys out on the range were shooting at 70 yards at a 10 inch target, and we're on the clock. So saying, hey, how, you know, and if you're firing that AR at, you know, trying to beat the time, if you get even three shots off within 3 seconds, you're not necessarily going to have a tight group. You know,
No. Yeah. I agree. What I was trying to say is that for a person that does it regularly, you know, a recreational shooter, a hunter, a law enforcement, a military professional, you'd say 147 shots, I could hit it with a snub-nose 38, right? That's what guys are going to say. But the other side of the thing is, it is plausible. I mean, we go back, invariably, we're going to go back to the Kennedy assassination because everybody's got all these different ideas, right? But if you look at it, Lee Harvey Oswald likely may or may not, but it's speculated that he made three shots of the bolt action rifle in a short period of time. It was plausible. It's been considered plausible. It is plausible that a guy with a lot of experience could hit a guy at 147 yards with an AR lying down on the deck, right?
It's
plausible. So I look at it and say, what you don't hear and what many, many people watching this right now already know is you've got optics, you've got bullet signatures, you've got trajectories, you've got all of these things that make sense to so many people who have shot long guns before. What doesn't make sense is the lapse in preparation and security protocols outside the immediate perimeter of that stage.
Yeah, that's it. That is it in a nutshell.
So it comes back to where we started. Was it incompetence or was it something more nefarious? And right now, a lot of people are talking about different things that just don't add up. So I'm not going to take a stand. I'm going to say both are plausible. Certainly, Congress is going to find incompetence. I don't know what else is going to happen. But
well, yeah, but you know, I appreciate you taking the time to lay this out. Because again, you're not talking out your ass. You know, you're not one of these guys that makes, you know, while you're a great storyteller and you've been a terrific author and you've got books to prove it, you're not a fabricator.
I graduated, for people talking about, I graduated the Marine Corps Scout Sniper School, which ain't bad, right?
Yeah.
I did it for a living for a long time. I did it in some very notorious and high profile engagements over time. So I'm not saying I'm right, but I'm telling you what I was trained and what I've done in person and
exactly.
I've worked. So you can take my information and you can combine it with anything you want, but my perspective is at least based on experience and education, training.
So I'll summarize it this way. The Secret Service dropped the ball in failing to put somebody on top of that roof or to making sure that nobody could get on that roof without being shot.
That was a failure. It would be hard to argue that's not a failure, yes.
The kid showing up wearing camo, carrying a gun, it easily other law enforcement could have thought, oh, well, he's part of the FBI or he's part of the sheriff's department or everybody make the assumption that he's, because otherwise he'd be carrying a case firearm. You wouldn't carry it out in the open unless you're, you know, part of the team.
That's
assumption.
Certainly possible. I mean, yeah. You know, been in situations, information, confusion. What do they say? Something, the first thing that happens in combat is.
So the
shit goes wrong in a hurry.
Yeah. And the war plans go out the door.
Okay. Exactly. And that's it. When you've got that many agencies engaged in a setting like that, I'm not saying it happened. I'm saying it is plausible that somebody in law enforcement would have said, we got a guy walking through a field in camouflage pants with a long gun. The first question would be, who is it? Is it a bad guy? Is it a good guy? And the first thing to do to prevent one agency from shooting another agency is to make sure that it is not another agency.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to explain that it is possible that this is not a conspiracy, that it was a mistake. It's at least plausible that law enforcement was trying to find out who this guy is on the roof, because in many, many, many instances, they do have guys on roofs and those guys might be wearing a tactical t-shirt. I saw a flag on the guy's.
Yeah. He had an American flag. Yeah.
He had an American flag on his sleeve and he's wearing camouflage pants and he's got an AR. He's not wearing a black trench coat
a Che Guevara shirt.
Yeah, exactly right. So I'm saying that the FBI right now is looking at every possibility, and this will be micro investigated to the finest detail. And this will come out for discussion next week. But we're going to have congressional hearings, right? But for conversation purposes today, if you look at the mechanism, what happened, what might have happened, certainly people are talking about conspiracies and inside jobs. I've seen it all. I'm not saying that I'm taking a stand on anything. I'm saying it is plausible based on what I've done tactically in many situations over decades. It is plausible that the best of intentions went awry.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love law enforcement. I love first responders and people who put themselves in harm's way. And I think the Secret Service is the finest protective agency on the planet Earth. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But the reality is that they say that Donald Trump survived, mistakes were made, people will pay for those mistakes. There's no question. This is a highly charged political environment. But the reality, you can make decisions on your own. You don't have to listen to a word I'm saying, but you should make decisions based on factual information.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think that's what we're trying to do here.
Well, in fact, what I had not fully comprehended or considered until you said it. And then once you said it, I went, yeah, damn, how did I miss that? Was looking through the scope, looking at the roof, and then being able to get that immediate transition and hit that target. Because if they said, hey, there's somebody on the roof, to just simply sit down with that scope at that distance and try to find the target, that's going to take a lot more. If that's what was happening, that was going to take more than 20 seconds.
Hell yeah. I mean, we talk about field of view, right? You go to Bass Pro Shops, you're going to buy an optic and you're going to consider field of view and magnification, right?
Yeah,
Those are
right.
components. So we're talking a very large number of the people that are watching this right now, and they'll say, okay, yeah, that makes sense. If I have a binocular with a very wide field of view, I can gather a lot of landscape and I can focus in on something. If I have a fixed power, even a variable power sniper scope, a law enforcement sniper scope, even at the lowest magnification at 150 yards, I'm looking through a straw
Yeah.
and I can't see much of what lies outside. So if you're trying to acquire a target and you're trying to make decisions based on the panorama of what they're looking at, it's not easy. And every hunter knows that. Every recreational scoped rifle shooter knows that. Everybody understands what these snipers were dealing with, but the mechanism of how they got to the shot, I think once the shot was cracked, the response was brilliant. I mean, they acquired the target, they being the law enforcement snipers, acquired the target and killed the bad guy very quickly,
Right.
probably with one shot. But why they didn't take it beforehand is the million-dollar question, because they could not have taken that shot unless they had already
Really?
acquired the
Yeah.
target.
And
They
that's.
had to have had they had to have been eyes on the bad guy before he pulled off that trigger, because you cannot acquire a target with a scope, 10 power scope at 150 yards when you don't know where the shots came from.
Yeah.
It's impossible
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
that period of time. So that tells us, the mechanism tells us what happened. It doesn't tell us why those roofs weren't covered. It doesn't tell us why nobody got this guy walking across the field. There's many, many questions, but the response of the Secret Service on scene, I thought, was heroic. The guys that hit the principal, Vice President Trump, excuse me, I'm sorry, former President Trump,
Right.
and the sniper, once they engaged, killed that guy very quickly. But what led up to that, that's the problem.
Brother, you're a genius, as always.
I'm a
No.
moron, but I do think it's important because, Larry, you and I have been through this. Remember the DC sniper, the crazy stuff that was going on? People are hearing all these gunshots, and I'm saying they're not gunshots. They're hearing the snap of the bullet, then they're hearing the gunshot. So they think it's two rounds and it's
Yeah.
echoing off. There are things people need to talk about to avoid more problems. And you can't blame a commentator on CNN. It's not their world. What I do blame them for is trying to make shit up, because they want to be the authority, and
Yeah.
they say idiotic things. They just don't know. They don't know the questions to ask, and I feel badly about that.
Well, and I'm blessed to I've got a group of friends who are snipers, but I count you as the best of those. And I
Well,
really, really appreciate you, man, taking time out on your Sunday afternoon. I call up and say, hey, let's chat.
brother, you called me up and said, I'll meet you in Baidoa, Somalia tomorrow afternoon. And I'd say, do I bring flip-flops or Crocs or what? I mean, anything, buddy, anything.
I'd say I'll bring the cigars and scotch and we'll have a good chat.
So saying, hey, let's get together on a computer screen is not much of an ask, man, after
Oh
what.
boy, yeah, it's a downside. All right, man. Well, hey, thanks for doing this, and I'll see. I'm going to put this up tonight. I'll send you a link.
You're the best, Larry.
All
Thanks,
right,
man.
brother. Later.
I'll see you.
Bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.